This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. There's a sense that all sides in Iran are holding their breath as they look ahead to the day after tomorrow. That's the anniversary of the Islamic Revolution and a day when protesters and government supporters are expected in the streets. Both have staged enormous marches in recent months, but never on the same day. At the same time, Iran provided fresh evidence of its determination to press ahead with its nuclear ambitions in defiance of United Nations resolutions. We'll get the latest from NPR's Mike Schuster in Dubai and talk with former Undersecretary of State Nicholas Burns about the options on Iran. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Later in the program, Jason Beaubien was one of the first NPR reporters to reach Port-au-Prince after the earthquake 4 weeks ago today. He joins us to take your calls. But first, NPR foreign correspondent Mike Schuster is following events in Iran and joins us by phone. Mike, always nice to have you on with us.
Thanks, Neil. Good to be with you.
And you're in Dubai on the opposite shore of the Persian Gulf because...
Yes, I'm about as close as you can get to Iran without actually being in Iran. And, of course, the mood, at least the government's mood toward foreign correspondents, hasn't been good since last June.
And I wonder, is there any way to anticipate what might happen on Thursday when people mark the revolution's anniversary?
Well, I think that there is a way of anticipating. We won't know for sure, but since last June 12th, when the election that brought a second term for Mahmoud Ahmadinejad took place, there have been so many demonstrations, and they've been on politically and religiously sensitive dates, and the opposition has continued to bring out large numbers of people in the streets. And in late December, for instance, there was a demonstration that actually turned quite violent, and there were eight or nine people killed by gunshots coming from the security forces. So it looks like both the government and the opposition is anticipating something like that, only bigger. The leaders of the opposition have repeatedly called on protesters to come out into the streets, and the government has constantly been warning protesters that there could be very serious violence if they do come out in the streets. That's a recipe for confrontation.
There has also been sober lesson, if you will. Some protesters, some people involved in previous protests have been executed.
Yes, there were two a couple of weeks ago who were hanged, and the government threatened before Thursday to hang several more. There are a lot of people who have been arrested and freshly put in jail, including some journalists. The government so far hasn't carried out the threat to execute more associated with the protests. But we still have a couple of days to go before Thursday. It clearly was a signal to the opposition that they face violence and potential death if protesters continue to go out into the streets. But I've been amazed constantly at the bravery and determination of those in the opposition to go out in the streets and largely protest nonviolently.
Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, said the anniversary punch, quote-unquote, at least that's the translation we got, will stun the West. Any idea what that punch might be?
No, I think that's a threat. He's talked about that before. Other key leaders, particularly of the Revolutionary Guards and the police, have made similar statements. Clearly, they don't want demonstrators to come out into the streets, and I think that's especially true on February 11th, because February 11th was the anniversary of the triumph of the Islamic Revolution 31 years ago. It's like the July 4th for Americans, and this is a time when the opposition is calling on tens of thousands of people to come out into the streets and effectively, not overtly, but effectively pose a challenge to the government on its most emotive political holiday. So it makes sense that the government, from their point of view, the government leaders want to prevent that from occurring.
And how profound is this challenge? Is there any idea at this moment how many people the opposition can count on?
No, I don't think we can really know. The largest demonstration that took place after the election last June was on June 15th, 3 days after the election, and there were millions of people in the streets then. The opposition has not been able to recapitulate that at any time since. But thousands of people have certainly come out into the streets for demonstrations since that time, and probably tens of thousands at the end of December. So we know that that under the best of circumstances for protesters, if they weren't facing the guns and the truncheons of the security forces, that there would be many, many people who would go out into the streets. What's amazing to me is that in the face of violence, so many people continue to do that.
Then there is the other set of developments, and that revolves around nuclear's nuclear program of Iran. Last week, briefly, there was excitement after President Ahmadinejad told a television interview that Iran was ready to accept the UN deal and send its low-enriched uranium out of the country to be reprocessed up to 20% for use in a medical reactor to provide isotopes for medicines, and then apparently that was all described as a misunderstanding.
It's very hard to understand the Iranian strategy on this because they've been back and forth on this for quite some time. Just a couple of weeks ago, it seemed that deal, which was originally proposed by the United States to Iran last fall, it seemed that deal was dead. The Obama administration had given Iran, you remember, a loose deadline of the end of 2009. That carried over into January, but finally in late January, it seemed to be clear from statements by the Iranian government that there was no deal, no swap, it wasn't going to take place. And then just a few days ago, you get President Ahmadinejad saying, oh, no, we'll take that deal. And then that was withdrawn on Sunday, in effect, when Ahmadinejad said he had given instructions to Iran's Atomic Energy Organization to go ahead and start increasing the grade of enriched uranium on their own. And that's what they claim they started to do today. So it's been a very confusing time. And the world has been really watching this quite closely. I mean, one thing the Iranians did do is up the interest all over the world in what precisely they are actually doing with their uranium. It feels to me that, like, it's impossible at this point to keep whatever they're going to do a secret.
The Secretary of Defense and the President of the United States continue to talk about the prospects of, well, given their unwillingness to take the deal, now is the time for sanctions. And this latest announcement that they're going to go reprocess this uranium up to 20% on their own, the Russians, who've been reluctant to go along with the prospect of sanctions, describe this as a blatant violation of UN Security Council resolutions.
Well, it does seem that the Russians, for the first time, have really taken note of this and are somewhat alarmed at the Iranian steps. The Russians, to some degree, have been a buffer between the United States and the Europeans on the one hand and the Iranians on the other. And the Russians have said, well, up until today, the Russians have said, no need for new sanctions. This can be worked out. That's the Chinese position as well. But this action that Iran took today, or at least announced it was going to take, seems to have gotten the attention quite robustly of the Russians. And, we're hearing much tougher comments come out from members of the Obama administration, especially Secretary of Defense Gates, who was on a tour in Europe and who had some tough things to say about sanctions in Iran in both Italy and France. And, Neil, I think that probably is the reason why there were demonstrations today at the Italian embassy and the French embassy in Tehran. There were small groups of pro-government demonstrators that marched to both embassies and threw rocks and eggs at the embassies. And I'm guessing that the reason is because the leaders of both Italy and France appeared with Gates over the last couple of days appear to be with him in calling for additional sanctions against Iran.
The Security Council could not impose sanctions without the vote of, or at least
acquiescence
of China. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Right. Has there been any shift thus far, any statement from Beijing?
A couple of days ago, the Chinese diplomat did say, I think at the foreign ministry in Beijing, that this wasn't the time for sanctions. It wasn't necessary at this point. The Chinese tend to follow the lead of the Russians in this. The Russians, to some degree, provide cover for China in some of these issues. But we'll have to see once that actually gets into the Security Council for further discussions. Because the truth is that Iran going ahead and doing this raises a number of red flags, but it also, it can be argued that as a result of further enrichment of uranium, Iran may be violating UN Security Council resolutions that are already in the books and that have already imposed three rounds of sanctions on them. So this is a serious, it'll become a serious matter for the Security Council, whatever the different nations of the security, whatever position they take.
And what of Iran's neighbors? You're there in the Persian Gulf.
I think there's a lot of nervousness, and there has been for quite some time, particularly among the Gulf Arab states, Saudi Arabia and the smaller states. They see Iran growing as a regional power. I think that that's acknowledged, that Iran is a regional power. But they always get nervous when there seems to be moments when there's a greater tension between Iran and the United States, because they fear that they could be caught in the middle of any kind of shooting war if it were to break out. And so the Saudis tend to take a firm stance against Iran, and the smaller Gulf states, because there's a lot of banking that's done through here, Dubai, for instance, and a lot of trade that's done with Iran through Dubai, they don't want to see anything like a serious conflict break out.
And the neighbors, of course, are concerned not just about developments inside Iran, but what's going inside Iraq as that plays out vis-a-vis Iran, and what plays out in Afghanistan as that goes vis-a-vis Iran. The United States is so heavily involved in this part of the world.
Well, that just underscores how much of a regional player Iran is. Iran has a significant role to play in Iraq, and it has close relations with a number of Shiite parties and politicians in Iraq. And Iran has had much to do with the conflict in Afghanistan over a long period of time. And in fact, the Iranians have overtly said that were the United States to take any kind of serious military action against Iran, that it could retaliate against the United States in both those countries, in Iraq and Iran. So there's a real feeling, not that conflict necessarily will break out anytime soon, but if there were to be some kind of conflict, it would quickly spread in the region.
Mike Schuster, thanks very much. He's there in Dubai for National Public Radio News, watching the situation in Iran. Appreciate it, Mike.
You're welcome.
Coming up, we'll be talking with Nicholas Burns, Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs in the George W. Bush administration. He'll tell us what he thinks some of the options on Iran are at this point, where we go from here. And your calls, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. President Obama made a surprise appearance at the White House press briefing within this past hour. One of the issues he addressed, Iran's nuclear ambitions. He said the U.S. is developing what he called a significant regime of sanctions in response to Iran's continued steps toward what he called nuclear weaponization. The president also mentioned that he has concerns over who exactly speaks for the government in Tehran.
One of the difficulties in dealing with Iran over the last several months is it's not always clear who's speaking on behalf of the government, and we get a lot of different mixed signals. But what's clear is that they have not said yes to an agreement that Russia, China, Germany, France, Great Britain, and the United States all said was a good deal, and that the director of the IAEA said was the right thing to do and that Iran should accept.
President Obama speaking at the White House briefing room within the last few minutes. This week, Iranians mark the 31st anniversary of the Islamic Revolution and continue to debate its legacy, while at the same time, Tehran announces it intends to further enrich uranium in apparent defiance of UN resolutions. And let's go now to Nicholas Burns, former Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs in the George W. Bush administration, now a professor at the Harvard Kennedy School. And Ambassador Burns, good to have you with us today.
Nice to be with you.
And when the President of the United States says it's not clear who we talk to in Tehran, that is of concern.
It is. I actually think that President Obama has done a really fine job over the last 12 months in positioning the United States to be, in essence, a country that can pressure Iran, can offer negotiations as he has done, but be in a position now to put together a major international coalition to sanction the Iranians. It's this combination of efforts that we probably need. It's a very chaotic time in Iran, The opposition is stronger in Iran. I think the Iranian government is feeling the heat from its own opposition, and it may be trying to create a diversion by acting out the way it is and acting up by being so provocative as to say they're going to enrich uranium up to 20%, they're going to build nuclear power plants, that kind of thing. So I think that President Obama's strategy is, I think he's positioned the United States well to be effective in a very complex and even dangerous game that's going to be played out over the next 6 to 12 months.
Did he, I know this statement just came out, but did the president to your ears seem to be speaking to the rather mercurial president of Iran, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, and also to the supreme religious leader, Ayatollah Khamenei?
Well, I suspect, but I don't know for sure, that in essence it's probably not going to be possible to influence the Iranian leadership at this point. If they ever wanted to have an opportunity to negotiate with the United States, and it's been 30 years, Neil, since there have been serious, substantive, continued talks between our two countries, 30 years, they had that chance over the last 12 months with President Obama. He offered them time and again an avenue towards negotiations. There was this compromise that Mike Schuster talked about by the U.S., Europe, China, and Russia to try to take enriched uranium out of the country, return it for medical isotopes for their medical reactors. And the Iranians have turned that down. And they've now basically said over the last 24 hours, we're going our own way. We're going to ramp up and increase our enrichment program. And I think that President Obama now has no alternative but to do to what he said today he would do, and that's to put together a coalition of countries that would do a couple of things. One is to pass at the UN Security Council very tough targeted sanctions, economic sanctions, against Iran. Second, to continue, in effect, to contain Iran's power, because the United States military, of course, our navies in the Gulf and our militaries in Iraq and Afghanistan, we're in a position to, in effect, prevent the Iranians from using their newfound power in the region. Continue to offer negotiations, because it may be that these sanctions, the real impact of the sanctions will be to bring Iran back to negotiations. And finally, I think what the Obama administration needs to do is to be much more clear about our support for the opposition, for the people in the streets who want a better life and who want freedom. I think if I had to recommend anything, and I admire what President Obama has done so far, I would say the U.S. should be more vocal in supporting the people who want democracy and freedom in Iran.
One more question for you from me, then we'll get to the listeners who are anxious to discuss the options ahead in Iran, and that is the idea of sanctions. Well, if sanctions are to be effective, we've learned over the years two things need to apply. One, they need to be very unanimous. The world,
right,
the entire world has to apply them, and the other is they take time. The problem with the first one is that Iran has something a lot of people want, and that's oil. And the other one is Iran is, what, 2-3 years away from a nuclear weapon?
And you're right, Neil. These are very, very short timelines that we're talking about. I think the issue of sanctions is a very tough one. Sanctions, as you suggest, are nearly always an imperfect instrument, and they do not usually succeed in international politics because you need to get nearly universal application of the sanctions. In this case, I think the United States can rely upon the European powers, particularly France and Britain, who have been very stalwart. I agree with Mike Schuster that it seems that the Russians are now tacking towards the United States and the West Europeans because they're so frustrated with the inconsistencies and unreliability of the Iranian government. The key country will be China. China has become the largest trade partner of Iran. China is a major purchaser of Iranian oil and gas. China tends to have a foreign policy that is more mercantile, more mercantilistic than anything else. It focuses on its commercial base. China needs to reflect seriously, if it wants to be a global leader, about how to be a responsible global leader and to be in the middle of this effort toward on sanctions, not at the edge of it, or not even blocking the sanctions, which I suspect the Chinese may be planning to do.
Let's get some callers on the line. We'll begin with Peter. Peter calling us from Berkeley.
Hi. Thanks for this opportunity. I remember hearing Ambassador Burns recently on Charlie Rose quote Winston Churchill, "Keep calm and carry on." I wrote that down and thought about it a lot. I traveled to Iran for 6 weeks in 1978, and I still remember with appreciation the very nice people I met and the deep spirituality that I felt there. And I was remembering Sir Kenneth Clark, who finished up his TV series, Civilization, with I think he quoted somebody else by saying, the people of the world will have peace when they learn to take each other seriously. And I was just wondering how we can possibly offer, as an international community, Iran more of what it needs vis-a-vis security and recognition, respect, whatever it is, participation maybe in a, I don't know, global televised dialogue would be one idea, but offer it in such a way that we can get the concessions we need from them better rather than both sides, you know, whether posturing or fighting each other and threatening.
Well, Peter, I thank you very much for what you've said, and I think you're right that this is a time when Americans need to think very carefully about the patient application of diplomacy towards a very difficult international problem. My own view, for what it's worth, is that it would be a major error to think that military force can resolve this by its own. It cannot. And the prospect of a third war is really forbidding for our country. We have enough on our hands with Iraq and Afghanistan. I admire what President Obama has done, because I think he's really kind of tried to honor what you've been saying, what you said in your comments. We do need to talk after an absence of dialogue of 30 years. We need conversations among religious leaders, among political leaders. And he gave them an opportunity, but they have turned him down. The Iranian government has refused to meet the United States at the negotiating table. So I think for the time being, the president has no alternative but to go for sanctions. But I think that the application of sanctions might actually lead the Iranians back to negotiations if they're sufficiently isolated, if they're sufficiently pressured. And my suspicion is, I don't know this for sure because I'm not part of the administration, but I'm sure the administration wants to avoid a war. I'm sure that these steps are designed to lead us towards, at some point, a peaceful resolution of disputes, but the president needs to be tough-minded. I think his statements today were, and I think we ought to try to support where he's leading us on Iran.
Could I ask you, please, to elaborate a little bit on this 30 years since no substantial discussions, if I'm saying that right? Well, that goes back while the Shah was in power. Weren't we talking with the Shah a lot? What do you mean by that?
31 years since the revolution come Thursday,
right.
Peter.
Really?
But yeah.
Yes. Since the Ayatollah Khomeini returned to Iran, since the Islamic Revolution, of course, we had the hostage crisis right during those years, 1978, which didn't end until January 20th, 1981. Since then, we have not had diplomatic relations with Iran. We've had episodic contacts at various international meetings, you know, each administration, but we've never had a time when the two governments sat down for days, weeks, months and said, look at all the issues that separate us. Nuclear weapons, Iraq, Afghanistan, Iranian support for Hezbollah and Hamas. We've never talked about them. We've never had that opportunity. I'm not aware of any country in the world where we haven't had a substantial, meaningful conversation over the same time period. I mean, think of it. We've talked to the North Koreans. We've talked to the Cubans, but we haven't talked to the Iranians. And it would be foolish indeed for us to be on a war footing with a country that we knew so little about. And so I am very much for dialogue and negotiation, but it takes two to tango. Hmm. It takes a negotiating partner. And in this case, I think President Obama has really tried, but he's been turned down. And so, again, I'd say I think he has no recourse but to seek these sanctions.
An email we have from Michael in Boulder, Colorado. We get a lot of these every time we raise this issue. I don't understand how anyone can discuss a nuclear Iran without mentioning the nuclear arsenal of Israel. If a nuclear-free Middle East is desired, it is impossible to avoid talking about both, unless you're the U.S. media, it seems.
Well, we'll talk about it right now on NPR. But my sense is that Israel is a responsible, democratic government of a democratic country. And I really don't think you can compare Israel to the situation in Iran. We have an autocratic government, which is a mendacious government, a government that has not met its international commitments. And it's lied to the United Nations and to the rest of the world about what it's doing to enrich uranium time and again. And so I just don't think there's a moral comparison between these two countries.
In terms of the
two governments, I should say.
I understand. In terms of international obligations, Iran's derived from the fact that it was a signatory to the Non-Proliferation Treaty, a treaty which Israel has never signed.
Iran is a signatory of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, but the reason why Iran has been sanctioned three times by the UN Security Council, 2006, 2007, and 2008, is because it's fundamentally violated those commitments that it did make in writing to the NPT. You know, when President Obama and President Sarkozy and Prime Minister Brown announced in September at that press conference in New York that Iran had this facility near the holy city of Qom that it hadn't told the rest of the world about, that exposed an Iranian lie. And when the Security Council found out many years ago, several years ago, that Iran had been enriching uranium, that exposed an Iranian lie to the international community. So I really don't think it's possible to compare the behavior and attitudes of the Iranian and Israeli governments. They're two very, and we're allied, in a sense, to Israel. We have a commitment to Israel. And Israel's democratic nature, I think, makes it a very responsible country, whereas Iran's autocratic government has been very irresponsible in the way it's dealt with the rest of the world.
Now a professor at the Harvard Kennedy School, Nicholas Byrne served as Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs in the Bush administration. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Nick on the line. Nick with us from Winchester in Virginia.
Hi, is this from Winchester?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Okay, thank you. Undersecretary Burns, I'm a retired Foreign Service officer, and my own feeling is that we have a history of not speaking bluntly with the Iranians, going back to the time when we didn't let the Shah in immediately for medical treatment. But specifically, and several years ago, the National Intelligence Estimate was that Iran was in was proceeding with a nuclear armaments program. Two or three years later, a new report said they had ceased in 2005, I believe. Now, the flip side of it is that they had been lying like rugs, as you pointed out, up until that time.
And Nick, we appreciate the history lesson. Can you, if there's a question?
The question is, I think that as a part of our diplomacy, we should be absolutely blunt about every lie we have caught them in, and if we want to go back for 30 years, that's fine. I just think that they should be. We should be pointing out to the world, as well as reminding the Iranians, that they have a history of lying to us ever since 1979, and that we have bent over backwards to.
All right, Nick, let's get a response because I want to leave room for another person's question.
Thank you. Thanks, Nick, very much for your comment. I would just say that it's important for us to distinguish, as I think we're doing, between the Iranian government and the Iranian people. One of the great ironies of the modern Middle East is that the Iranian people tend to have a very favorable view of the United States. The Iranian government, of course, does not. It has been a government, this new militarized government, in Iran that has lied consistently to the international community, to the United Nations, and to the U.S., and so we shouldn't be shy about saying that. I think President Bush was very forthright in making the case that Iran's actions to support terrorism and to promote this nuclear weapons future was a great concern, not just to the U.S., but the whole world. And I think President Obama has done the same. And so both of our presidents, I think, have been very forthright. And now I think we need to be patient. We need to be sure that a combination of diplomacy, negotiations, and sanctions, I think, still might be effective to avoid a war that we should surely try to avoid.
Let's see if we can get one last caller in. Scott's joining us from Jackson, Michigan.
Hi. I just wanted to make the comment that I think the basic problem you have in dealing with Iran is they're like the mythical dog Cerberus. They're the thing with three heads. Basically, when you're dealing with Iran, you've got the secular government, you've got the Revolutionary Guard, and, of course, you've got the theocracy, the Ayatollahs. And so basically, and I don't see that any one of those institutions actually has absolute control over what happens in Iran. Furthermore, if they did get a nuclear weapon, the really alarming thing about that would be is who would have absolute control over it? Would it be the Revolutionary Guard or would it be the secular government? You know, who knows?
Scott, that's a very good comment, and I guess I'd agree with you that part of the problem, and President Obama mentioned it in his press conference today, is who are we dealing with? Who's making decisions in Tehran? Since the June 12th elections, the elections that were so blatantly unfair, the Iranian government seems to be more militarized, more dominated not just by the mullahs, but by the Revolutionary Guard. And that's very disturbing because the Revolutionary Guard is a hardline, far-right, intolerant group of people who want to impose not only their own brand of Islam on the Iranian people, but want to impose an autocratic government on them. That element in Iran does not want to reach out to the United States, does not want negotiations, and I think wants to build towards confrontation. So dealing with them, I think, has to be done not just by the U.S., but by the international community, and that's why it's going to be so important that Russia, and particularly China, become much more tough-minded and realistic about Iran, and join us in the sanctions and put the kind of pressure on Iran that might lead us away from a confrontation and back towards some ground, common ground, where we can have a diplomatic settlement, a negotiated settlement.
And I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. I apologize to Scott and to Undersecretary Burns. Stay with us. We're going to be talking about Haiti. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.